Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Ian Cundall, Baseball America Prospect Podcast. And as we did on the Hot Sheet show this week, we're talking about the trade deadline because it's not that far away. We love talking about it. It's one of the times of year that, you know, the prospect world and the Major League Baseball world intersect in a way that they don't always. They do it, you know, kind of spring training now. But it does feel like, Ian, that this could be a really interesting one, and it could go a couple of ways. I'm going to basically give the ultimate equivocation here, which is it could be that almost nothing happens because everyone thinks they're in it, or it could be that everything happens because there's so much give and take of are you in it, are you not, teams that might. I could see teams that are going to trade away big league talent but also acquire big league talent at the same time. A lot could happen. You've been kind of diving into this. You're writing a lot about this for us. Kind of what is the state of it as you kind of see it a little bit less than 2 weeks away from trade deadline?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think we're in a position where we've seen one kind of noteworthy deal so far with the Dodgers. And that's because they're one of the few, I think, you know, more or less guarantees to be in the playoffs. You know, I look right now at the standings and in the National League, if you're a Brewer, if you're the Brewers, the Dodgers, and the Braves, I think you feel really good about your position. Similarly, the Cubs and the Phillies. So that leaves one spot left. You look in the American League, I mean, maybe the Rays and the Yankees can feel good, but can they? Like, they were up, you know, 15 games or something on the Red Sox 2 weeks ago, and now all of a sudden it's like a 5-game lead. You know, they both of them have kind of struggled lately and have kind of drawn back to the pack. So I just think that we're in for kind of a wait for now because we need to really get some separation between the buyers and the sellers. And right now there's a few noteworthy sellers. You know, you've got the Mets, you've got the Giants, you've got the Rockies, you got the Angels, you have the Athletics, and then you have Royals. Sorry, couldn't remember the Royals. You have about six, so three in each league that are for sure sellers. Other than that, every other team is within about 4 or 5 games of the wild card. So, you know, what do you do there? Do you look at it and say, hey, there's not a lot of sellers, so I can, you know, really get good value for my players. And realistically, if we don't really have a chance to win, you know, a pennant or anything like that. Or is it, do you take the opposite of approach? A team like the Pirates, for example, I think they're a fascinating one to watch for me because they have a winning record right now. This is a team that has not won a lot lately. Do they realistically have a chance to beat any of the three teams I mentioned earlier in the National League? Probably not. But at the same time, you know, they're right in it. They're a couple of games back of that wild card spot. If you're their owner, you kind of have to go for it this year.
I would actually, the one thing I'll say is okay, with the Pirates, are the Pirates going to win it all this year? No. Could they win a series?
I think yes, in the way
100% yes. I would hate to face them in a wild card series where it's like, oh wait, who's on the mound? Skeens,
Jared Jones. I mean, the way Jared Jones is pitching the last.
Who's on the mound the next day? Jared Jones. Well, yeah, that's not good.
Braxton Ashcraft in game 3. Next day,
Braxton Ashcraft. Well, I don't like our matchup here.
No. But so I think that's what makes it so interesting is you have this mix too of the teams that are in it for that final wild card spot. It's a mix of teams like the Pirates, teams like, I think the White Sox are currently in the division lead, but teams like the White Sox, where there weren't a ton of expectations. The Marlins is another one. And then you have those teams that were expected to be there and kind of had disappointing starts and are riding the ship, the Red Sox, the Orioles, the Astros, the Tigers in the American League. And you go to the National League, the Padres, the Diamondbacks, you know, the Reds are kind of on the periphery, but then you have the surprising Cardinals. Like, it's a very weird grouping of teams. And because you have teams that probably were expecting to sell that are now buying, the Cardinals, the Nationals, or they could be buyers. Excuse me, I should clarify that. The Red Sox, as of, you know, 3 weeks ago, the Red Sox were probably going to be selling. And now they're, you know, it sounds like going to be one of the most active teams looking to buy. And so much has changed in the last couple of weeks. And that's kind of the danger of it. We're still 2 weeks away or just under 2 weeks away. It's 13 days from now. So much can change. And I think that's why we're going to see a lot of teams waiting till that last minute. You know, these next 10, 11 days are really going to set the stage for that final weekend where I think we'll see that big sprint where you decide, hey, this is where I need to pick a lane. Are we going this way or this way? And that's, I think, one of the most difficult decisions, you know, team decision makers have to make is when you're in the middle, what lane do you go? Because it can really change the fortunes of your franchise going either way. You can have a surprising run like Arizona did a couple of years ago, making it all the way to the World Series when I think they finished the season, 9 games over 500 or something. and as the third wild card, or it can go the other way. And if you decide to sell, you have a chance, a small one, as we'll probably get into it a little bit, but you know, you have a chance to acquire a potential, you know, really valuable player at the deadline and who could help you going forward in the future. And so I think that's what makes it so fascinating, is there's just such a muddled middle ground that right now we just have, we don't have a lot of clarity on who the buyers or sellers are and who's frankly going to even be available.
So that's kind of the point you just alluded to, is the point that I wanted to make. And I want, and feel free to push back, maybe if you disagree a little bit on this, or at least have some shading to it. I try to put some shading on this, which is, I kind of say at the deadline every year, and I really do believe this, which is, if you're in it, the cost of going for it is usually quite marginal, right? Now, I want to lay that out and now put some qualifiers to it, right? Like a few years ago, we had the Tigers who thought they were out of it, traded away guys, but then made a run. So I don't want to make it sound like, I think it is possible to overemphasize the impact of making deals at the deadline. A lot of times the players who are dealt at the deadline in a very short sample, because you're really talking about August and September, don't really perform all that much, you know, and you kind of like, oh, that didn't really do much. But at the same time, even if you're in it and you're kind of like trading away guys who are rentals, you know, or kind of in a free agency, but making other moves, the sneaky thing for the Tigers that year is, yes, they traded away Jack Flaherty, but they also added like a Trey Sweeney, and they needed a shortstop at the end of the year. And so they did get better in some ways for their big league club while they were making moves. But the overarching point I wanted to make on this is that, okay, just to give an example from last year, I count 92 prospects who were traded around the deadline last year in non-DFA deals. That's a lot of prospects, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And Leo DeVries, we talked about. That is an elite prospect. It's our number two prospect game, traded for in the Mason Miller deal. That is an outlier of all outliers. We do not see moves like that. Okay. Let's put him to the side. A's do that trade over and over again, even though Mason Miller's great. Other guys traded. This is how we had them ordered at the deadline last year. Eduardo Taillé, Mick Abel, Kyle Steven, Boston Bateman, Braden Nett, Alan Roden, Kendry Rojas, Sammy Stafura, Jesus Baez, Jerron Watts Brown, James Tibbs, Jadher Arenamo, Cole Drake, Ashton Izzy, Tyler Locklear, Adam Saranowski, Blade Tidwell, Rafael Flores, Drew Gilbert, Cobb Hightower, Enrique Jimenez, Sean Linnean, Ryan Berger, Eduardo Nunez, Ronnie Cruz, Mitch Bratt, Everson Pereira, Henry Mendez, and number 30 was Henry Baez. Okay. Now, Ronnie Cruz, like that's 29 guys if we throw Leo DeVries out of it. Ronnie Cruz has ascended into the back of the top 100, kind of really dropped off a little bit since we put him in the 100. I think still, though, you would say the kind of prospect that you absolutely want to trade for in a deal like this. I'll ask you this, Ian. I just rattled off a lot of names. I am not saying that you wouldn't want to have Mick Abel today, who is recovering now from injury. You wouldn't want to have Kendry Rojas. You wouldn't want to have Adam Saranowski to some extent, or James Tibbs, who obviously is now a Dodger prospect who could be traded in the deadline. But is there, other than DeVries, and we throw Ronnie Cruz in there, that's 28 other names. Are there other names there where you're like, I can't believe that that prospect got traded, and look at what he's done?
And not really. It's funny. I think the one that really stands out beyond that is probably David Hageman.
David Hageman was 31.
It was just the context of the trade. He was traded. I think he was seen as the second or third piece. I don't think Arizona viewed it that way, but he was traded. I believe it was for Merrill Kelly. So it was for a rental starting pitcher. Like that's when you saw the prices of the other rental starting pitchers. I think the Kelly deal and the Dustin May trade at the time really stood out to me as like, ooh, that seems like a lot. And I think both of them have proven to be that was the case. But otherwise, yeah, I think if you're a buying team, you know, you're going for it. No one else really there that you listed, even some of the top guys, you know, the guys on the periphery of the top 100. I don't think the Phillies regret trading Mick Abel in order to get Johan Duran. I don't think they regret trading Eduardo Taillé in the same deal. You know, and maybe the Padres, the other one I was thinking about, you know, Boston Bateman, actually, he's like someone who's going to be rising the Orioles list next time we update. Like, He looks very promising. He's thrown way more strikes than he has in the past. 6'8" left-hander. He's someone that maybe they're going to regret, but they did get, I think, believe that was Ramon Laureano and Ryan O'Hearn, I believe was that. So that helped them, you know, make a run in the playoffs. So yeah, I think that, you know, that's just the cost of doing business. And if you look, if you had set the over under on 2.5 guys who had a 10-year big league career from that entire trade deadline, what would you take?
2.5. I'll probably take the over, because I will say, I feel like DeVries is pretty safe to get that.
Yeah.
And then I just need two more.
That was, I mean, it's 92 players.
I would say, but if I set it at 4, I think then it becomes really tough to take the over, doesn't it?
Yeah, because especially, one of the reasons I choose that number is you look at the rankings we have of the guys traded. So it was DeVries was number one as a hitter. Eduardo Faye, also a hitter. Definitely a risky hitter, though. I mean, you know, there's a ton of questions about his hit tool. After that, pitcher, outfielder, pitcher. Like, there's a lot of pitchers getting in there. And as we know,
a lot of pitchers get hurt, by the way.
Yes.
I did a little more work on this. Of the 92, there's been one release. There's been 4 DFAs out of that group. A couple other players traded. But it is noticeable that there's a number of pitchers. The notation I have is injured entire season, full season IL, injured entire year. Like, the big picture thing we're trying to say here, I guess, the way that I would lay it out is, yes, you should always be concerned about, like, trading away. Like, we could talk about Juan Soto for James Wood and CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore and Harlan Susana. Like, I don't know, like, you could say that the Padres absolutely should have done that and should do it again, because, like, they did make runs with Soto. They just couldn't get past the Dodgers, but they also revitalized that market. It's now one of the best baseball markets in the country and all that. But it's also a perfect trade for the Nationals, because James Wood is a stud. CJ Abrams was a stud. Mackenzie Gore has already brought them back up a haul. Huge. And Harlan Susana, when he comes back from injury, could be a stud. So, like, that was a great trade all the way around. There are so few trades like that. The vast majority of trades we're talking about are much more in the, you need a outfielder to kind of fill a platoon role, or you need a reliever, or you need a back-end starter. Those trades are basically what you take on the money, almost, is what I would say.
Well, also, and it's the Nationals are another example of this. They made another trade similar to that, and the return is nowhere near. The Trey Turner trade. They got back Josiah Gray, who has been largely hurt. I think in terms of expectations, has been a disappointment. And Keibert Ruiz, who's turned into what? A fringy starting catcher? He's someone you're fine starting, but he's in the bottom half of the league. And that was the return for multiple years of Trey Turner. So, and I believe Scherzer was in that trade also.
Scherzer, although Scherzer was as much a salary dump as that.
Yeah. Right. But so it's like, even that, you know, you're not swinging 100% with those mega deals either. And so that's why, ultimately I think it comes down to is if you're a team that's going for it, the odds are whatever trades you're going to make, with few exceptions, which I think you did a really nice job of outlining today, is probably worth the punt, because ultimately, like, the goal with this is to win a World Series. That's not, you know, this year, especially if you're competitive.
The best way I've spelled this out before, but, like, okay, if you said, what, give me an example of what we're talking about here. The Braves in 21 forever will be the example to me, probably, which is the Braves came to the deadline and they were basically down an outfield. Ronald Acuna was hurt. They really didn't. They were like, okay. And when I say that they went out and acquired an outfield, they went out and they got Eddie Rosario, who was a salary dump. That was just like, if you'll take what we're supposed to pay him, he's yours. They got Jorge Soler. Mm-hmm. They got Adam Duvall, and they got Jock Peterson. And they did not trade Alex Jackson, Bryce Ball. They didn't trade anything that ever came back to haunt them at 1/15th of the value of what they got. They added a whole outfield that then got them all the way, and they won the World Series. And I know that that's the extreme example of it, but one of the things that jumps out to me year after year after year, this goes back to really, I would say, formative for me on this, was when the Tigers traded JD Martinez to the Diamondbacks. That would have been 2014, maybe 2015.
Yeah, because that was before he was on the Red Sox. So yeah,
it would have been 2017. Okay, 2017. Okay. Right, And when they made that trade, and again, I just want to lay out, at that time, JD Martinez was a pure DH. I don't want to make it sound like anything other than that. But he was a DH who was hitting 305, 388, 630 for the Tigers as a 29-year-old at the time of the trade. He then went on to hit 302, 366, 741 for the D-backs that year. Okay, so he was
very good.
He had 29 homers in 62 games for the D-backs, right? He made a massive immediate impact, right? And you're like, okay, well, what did they give up? Jose King, Sergio Alcantara, and Dawel Lugo. And at the time, I remember, like, I think I was at my daughter's swim practice when this broke. And I was like, wait, I'm waiting for the extra name. You know, like the cornerstone name of that deal. And it's like, wait, Jose King, the like 5'8", like rookie ball infielder? Yes. So they got three utility infielders for JD Martinez? And the answer was yes. That's what they got. And that's what I just kind of like, deals like that over and over just remind me that you can really make an impact to your team at the way I would say it is, if you're trading prospects who are not sniffing the top 100, one out of every 10 of those, 20 of those, 30 of those may really come back to haunt you.
And yeah. And I think what makes this deadline so fascinating is the teams that are surefire buyers all either have among the top farm systems in all of baseball, or are farm systems that have taken a huge step forward this year and have plenty of interesting prospects. Because you look, Brewers, Dodgers, Rays, those are three of the best records in baseball. I think those are our top three farm systems right now, I believe. Then you have the White Sox. Very good farm system. Just
and by the way, who's the White Sox, which will go up again when we do our post signing deadline update.
Yeah. White Sox, very good. Mariners, very good farm system. They've had some guys take a really big step forward this year. The Braves, obviously, we've talked about endlessly on here about the strides the Braves have made, and they just added a bunch of guys. They added five draftees to their top 30 this year, because I think the biggest issue with the Braves system was it was top heavy. You know, there was a very good top about 12 to 14, and then it kind of dropped off. Not so much anymore when you've added five draftees in the top 30. You have the Braves. Then you go, you know, the Cubs have a decent farm system. The Cardinals
Let me just interrupt you there. And that's where I want to get – sorry to interrupt you. The Cubs are the perfect example of a team where the other thing you have here is if you have redundancies that are like – look, Kevin Alcantara doesn't have a half the value – third of the value probably now that he had a couple of years ago. But I will say right now, like, there are teams out there where it's like, yeah, let me give him a try. They've got Pedro Ramirez, you know, like he kind of fits for them. Like, but they've got multiple type versions of that guy who, okay, Jefferson Rojas, is he available? It's like, there's just like, they have plenty to make. Cause those are the type of players that are cornerstones of some of the biggest deals that get done at the deadline, I would say. Sorry, continue.
No, 100%. I mean, that's where, you know, and that's what's so fascinating about the deadline is very rarely do you need those elite prospects. So it brings into play so many other systems that normally when we're kind of ranking out the top 30s, because of the way the valuations work, it's very top heavy. You know, having those elite prospects really matters in the top 30 organizational rankings. But in the deadline, as you've talked about, do you know what matters? Depth. Depth and having interesting players at key positions. What are those positions? Pitchers and up the middle defensively. That's what teams want. They want, as you said, the Jefferson Rojas type. They want the catcher. They want a center fielder. They want guys up the middle who can help them. And I think that brings in other teams, as you said, like the Cubs is a great example of that. Another one who I think that could benefit is a team like the Red Sox. The Red Sox have pitching depth. Like, it might not be in the high minors. They also have some up the middle depth when you get down to the low minors. So they are another team that, you know, while it might not be the best at the top, you're probably not going to trade a Franklin Arias or even an Anthony Ianson unless it's for someone who's cost controlled. But you're moving down to that next tier. That's where it comes in, gets in interesting. If you're a team, you know, Endy Azucar, Harold Revis, guys like that are going to be really appealing. And that's what's so fascinating about the way this is kind of the standings are right now, is there's so many of those teams that are really deep in those areas beyond obviously the obvious ones, which are the Dodgers, the Brewers, and the Rays, who are really good and will have access to pretty much any player they want because of how good those systems are.
Of the 92 prospects that we have counted that were traded at the deadline last year, 56 were pitchers. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get into some of the teams more specifically right after this break.
What if you can actually have it all? And I'm talking about Mint Mobile taking the premium wireless bouginess, Kratz, but then bringing it to the transparency in pricing and the affordability in pricing.
They're going to lay everything out there with a cheap bill that, you know what, everybody can handle right now.
You can even bring your current phone and your number if you're thinking about it and you're like, I'm worried about that. No worries. They have you covered because they're able to convert people all the time to the Mint Mobile way. Go to mintmobile.com/territory. That's mintmobile.com/territory. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/territory. That's it. There's no catch. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12-month plan required. $15 per month equivalent, taxes and fees extra. Initial plan term only. Greater than 50 gigabytes may slow when network is busy. Includes up to 20 gigabyte hotspot. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com.
And we're back. So, Ian, you've written about this up at baseballamerica.com. We said the Dodgers we know are in it. I can tell you right now that in 2028 at the deadline, the Dodgers will be in it. Like this is just something that, you know, probably 2038, to be honest. But the
Dodgers already made a trade.
They already made a trade. Minor one, but they've made one. But again, the kind of trade that does show, like, you know, hey, they can trade Nick Frosso, who was a, you know, significant prospect at one point. It's like, okay, yeah. we're fine. But I would say more than anything, to just lay this out, the Dodgers have more outfielders at Double A. And I would say if you're an outfielder at Double A, you are in a situation where, okay, the clock has started on your prime value. At this time next year, that window will start to close, right? If you are still in the minors at this time next year, and you are that top tier of Jose De Paula, Mike Sirota, Zahir Hope, those guys, James Tibbs. James Tibbs, I'd say his clock is a little ticking a little faster, but those guys are all at the upper level of the minors. We've seen this in the past. If you get to, he has 750 plate appearances in AAA, you grow stale and your prospect value starts to diminish. Mm-hmm. Laying it out further, Kyle Tucker's on a contract that basically ensures he'll be a Dodger for multiple years to come. Teoscar Hernandez is on a contract that probably ensures he's a Dodger at least through the end of next year. Andy Páez is their best outfielder most of the time right now, best defender and all that. And their DH is Shohei Ohtani, who you're not moving anyone, sliding anyone to DH for that. Okay, we laid that out. So what are the Dodgers going to do? What do you think like they need to do here?
It's fascinating. I mean, I think when I look at this Dodgers team, it's got to be starting pitching. It's a high-end starter because if you look, the one thing, and I think this is an organizational philosophy, the Dodgers are really attracted to guys with huge stuff. What does that bring? Injury risk. And we've seen it this year. Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow are both currently hurt. Ohtani's not pitching right now. And that's kind of an ominous update that they're not – like he has a knee injury that they're not really considering pitching him right now.
But let me just lay out, okay, I'm sorry, but I've heard this before at this time last year. Like, I feel like the Dodgers got to August last year, and it's like the plan is every one of our real starters, the ones who are going to be in the postseason, we're going to put them on ice for a little while. They'll be back mid-September, and then we'll probably kind of go forward. Like, so I feel like I've heard this story before, like, you know, but continue.
It is. I mean, it's a completely fair point, but at the same time, you know, you look right now, they have Eric Lauer, who I believe was DFA'd by the Blue Jays and was acquired via trade. You have Roki Sasaki, who I would say has been very up and down. And then you have Justin Robleski, who there's going to be, and him and Emmett Sheehan are probably going to have innings limit concerns. So, you know, kind of four out of the five rotation spots, and should credit, Robleski has been fantastic this year. Like, just a really, really impressive find and development story from the Dodgers. But I think the rotation, I think the other position that you can watch with them is catcher. with Will Smith's status uncertain, Dalton rushing is going to have to play an everyday role, which is something he's never done in his major league career. Yep.
Can I just update? Like, they did move Will Smith, like, literally as we're recording this, they moved from the 60-day.
Oh, they did? Okay. Yeah.
So that doesn't mean he's done for the season, obviously. It does mean he's done for quite a while.
Yeah. And so I think that those are the two spots I really look at, because they've already started to augment their bullpen with the Halverson trade, as we mentioned earlier. And the good thing, I think, when you look at the market and you kind of look at the names that have been bandied about, you know, there are going to be some high-end starters. Whether Tarik Skubal gets on the market or not, we'll see. If he is, I mean, if you're the Tigers, it would be, you have to talk to the Dodgers, because they have everything you could possibly want in any deal. And similarly on the catcher's market, you know, we've heard Hunter Goodman's name. We've heard Shea Langeliers. You know, those are guys that if you're the Dodgers, yeah, like the Dodgers have plenty to go. And that's what makes it so fascinating, is they have the ability with the way their system is structured to kind of build out any sort of deal. Do you want a quantity deal? Do you want a quality deal? You know, they can accomplish both of those things. And it stems from when you have, you know, we have 9 outfielders in our top 20 right now. 6 of them are double A or higher. You know, we Kendall George, Zach Erhardt are probably more like kind of bench guys long-term, but both of them would be very appealing, I think, to teams and trades. Cause if you told me those guys carved out 5+ year major league careers, you can see that in a heartbeat. And yeah, go ahead.
Can I offer a PSA?
Yeah.
If you're a team making a trade with the Dodgers, right? And there you're working out the parameters of this, and you're sending them a catcher, and they're sending you back prospects. And then they're like, you know what? There's a guy in low A, there's a guy in rookie ball. We'll do this deal if you throw in one little sweetener. Just say no.
Well, because that's what makes them so impressive, is the way they've built it. You look at the farm system and the guys we're talking about, and by the time this comes out, like Zaire Hope is the number one player I identified when talking about the most blocked prospects. And my logic was, he has 2 players on his roster who are ahead of him in prospect rankings, Josue de Paula and Mike Sirota. He's not as good a hitter as either of them, and he's not as good a defender as Sirota is. So he kind of is in no man's land in that regard, where he's an excellent prospect. We have him number 55 in our top 100. He made the hot sheet this week because he had an excellent series coming out of the break. He's hitting all close to 300 with, I think, 23-ish home runs this year, 21, 22, 23 home runs. He's the 3rd best outfielder on his team. Like, that's, and as JJ laid out, there's just not enough room for him. So if you're willing to put him on the table, as we've seen, given how few top 100 prospects are traded, you'll have access to anyone if you're willing to put him on the table. And crazy thing, that was not someone they drafted. That was someone they acquired in a trade for a major league player. That was part of the Michael Busch trade. Mike Sirota was the same thing. He was part of the Gavin Lux trade. Like, that's what the Dodgers do so well, is maximizing every little asset, where it's, hey, we're trading you this guy, but we want that little second piece. Just throw that in.
And they've already been, you know, again, there's been reporting out there already this year that they're like, I would not be surprised at all if they trade outfielders, but in doing so, bulk up the big league club. But it may be that they bulk up the big league club, you know, kind of in a minor way, right? Like, it's one of those trades where you add a bullpen arm, but then they kind of shift it from, okay, Zaire Hope was our 4th best outfield prospect and still one of the 20 best outfield prospects in baseball, and we've turned that into a pitcher or a shortstop or a catcher or some other position where the player's lower rated now, but they clearly see things that they can improve. And so they're like, kind of like, they're doing both. They're both trading to help the present, but as we're just keep talking about, they're also going to find a guy that they're going to turn into a top 100 prospect down the road. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah. And that's what makes them such a fascinating team, is that they probably on paper already have the deepest team, but as they've shown and Andrew Friedman's shown, you know, there's never enough. They're going to keep going. They're going to push it to the max every time, because all they want to do is win. And that's how you have, you know, one of the best farm systems in baseball, even though you're operating under the most severe draft and international spending restrictions of any team. You know, that's, I mean, it's all well and good to have money with the major league team. That's how you can get an outfield like JJ just talked about. But at the same time, the way they operate around the margins and the way they've built up this farm system, when, you know, in the draft they had this year, I think it was just over 4.5 million or so in bonus pool money. Last year they had similar restrictions, and, you know, a couple of the guys they drafted last year now, and one's in the top 100 in Charles Davalan, another one, Zach Root, is just outside the top 100. You know, they get Christian Zazueta in a trade for Caleb Ferguson in the, I believe that was an offseason trade. you know, it's just the way that they're able to do this is just so impressive. And the result is, you know, heading into the deadline, I think they're the team you have to watch, because if you're one of these sellers too, this is who you're calling, you know, Zaire Hope, and even taking it down a tier, another guy I mentioned in my article was James Tibbs. James Tibbs is going to has appeal to other teams. I don't think he has a ton of appeal to the Dodgers long-term for a couple of reasons. Number one, not a great defender. He's not a great runner. So he doesn't really fit in a bench role. He's a guy that you probably need as either a strong side of a platoon or as like a second division regular type. He just does not fit well in a bench role. The odds of him starting for the Dodgers are low. Odds of him starting for some of the other teams who are sellers. Like, for example, if you're the Rockies, could you see James Tibbs, you know, playing left field for them every day? I think that's something I could easily see, or, you know, a team like that. So that's why someone like him is really interesting to me, is if you're, you know, when you're moving down a level with the trades, that's the kind of guys you get. And they're still very interesting players.
I wanted to throw out to talk about the Rays. And I say that because if you ask me, like, there is no guarantee that the Rays will be incredibly active. We'll have to see. But we also know the Rays are always willing to trade. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like you do the Rays for us now. I've done them for years. I feel like that this is an organization, much like we just said with the Dodgers, they could do anything they want to do
here.
Because now they have literally, I would say, some form of every kind of prospect you could want. Mm-hmm. If you want shortstops, good news, guys, they've got them. You want your offensive shortstop? Do you want your defense for a shortstop? Do you want a little bit of a blend of both? Do you want a dynamic up the middle guy? Well, you know, in center field, I don't know if they'll trade him, but they got one of those in Theo Gillen. Do you want a high ceiling pitcher with, you know, that's okay, you're available because there's some concerns. Brody Hopkins, what about the Brody Hopkins package? What about you need a guy who's not as high ceiling, but probably could help you in the second half, could be in your rotation next year? Well, what about a Michael Ferrett, you know, over here? Okay, well, no, maybe you just want thumpers. Okay, well, what about a Tatum Gray? You know, like, there's just so much here. Oh, catchers. We haven't even gotten into catchers. It's like, okay, how about Nathan Fleming or Caden Bodine? There's so much here. Does this feel like a team that could kind of shock us by making a big move rather than just kind of a, you know, some around the edges moves?
I think so, because the one thing, and I think this is the difference between them and the Dodgers, is you look at the way the Rays are constructed. They have plenty of runway if you're going to go out and get a superstar or a high-end player to fit them into their roster. With the Dodgers, it's like tricky to figure out where they fit into the lineup beyond catcher, just because of the way that team is, especially with Tommy Edman back. With the Rays, you look, they're running platoons at catcher, second base, right field, and center field right now. It's a lot of places where you can fit someone in and an everyday role. And that's why I think, again, going back to the catchers, that's, you know, they have catchers, but the thing with Nathan Fleming and Caden Bodine is neither of them is going to be ready this year, especially Fleming's a couple of years away. I think Bodine, you know, if you wanted to move him quickly, you could see him maybe up next year. But at the same time, if they can go out and get, you know, I feel like that's the most race thing would be to go out and get like Shea Langeliers for the middle of their lineup, you know, get another big home run hitting bat to augment the power they have from Junior Caminero and Yandy Diaz, fit him in the middle of the lineup. And if you have to trade one of those catchers along with what you said, you know, if you want high school infielders with high ceilings, they have those. They have up the middle center field types, you know, a Jacob Melton and Austin Over and guys like Aiden Smith, Slater DeBrun, like they have a ton of those. They have a ton of right-handed pitching, which is what you said. The majority of the guys traded at the deadline are pitchers. Well, if you want that, the Rays have plenty of it. They have, and the other thing that is appealing, I think, with the Rays is they have a lot of close to big league ready guys who can fit into that mold. You look in the pitching side, you've got Ty Johnson, you've got Brody Hopkins, you've got Michael Ferrett, you've got Alexander Alberto. If you want to go to the relief pool, you know, they have a TJ Nichols is another one. They have a ton of guys who are close to big league ready. And I think especially on the pitching side, that's very appealing to teams. And so I think they are primed to make a big impact. And then just the question is, will they want to pull the trigger on something like that?
The other thing I'll say with them is when you talk about this is the things that to me are generally the cheapest to acquire are outfielders and relief pitchers. Mm-hmm. And they are a team, I feel like. Now, the Rays are not going to take generally an outfielder who's out there just to stand in the field. And they want, I think, center fielders who can play in the corners. They're always about run prevention, mm-hmm. very much about run prevention. But that said, if you said that there ends up being, and I'm really struggling to name for you who's the most, like, I don't think it's the Joe Adells of the world. I think it has to be better than that. But if there is a major outfielder getting moved, like, okay, I mean, I don't think that them and the Red Sox are going to work a trade and Jaron Duran is going to become Ray. But that type of, like, if you said that there is an outfielder like that could become like, no, this is a cornerstone of our lineup guy, not a guy who plays against these certain matchups and we know that he can run and play defense.
I have the name for you. Okay. I don't know if he's available. Byron Buxton.
Now, again, Byron Buxton said he wants to stay in Minnesota.
I agree.
And the Twins, but yes, if you said that's exactly who we're talking about, is someone like that. And what I would come back to all of this is that they can do this. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that they have the pieces to do this. And we should start with, these are the teams who can do this, I should say, more fairly. Yeah. They can do this and be like, this is not mortgaging the future.
Rounding error.
This is teams, right. This is teams who, okay, if we trade 3 second tier prospects, because again, Leo DeVries of the world don't get traded. The Theo Gillens of the world, they don't get traded normally. Not saying they never, but they very rarely do. But if you're talking that you go down from that, you just rattled off like the, you know, if we go from the Cooper Flemings and the Daniel Pierces and the Santiago Suarez's and the Austin Overns and all that, the Ty Johnsons, the Xavier Isaacs, those you could, the Rays can trade from that tier a multitude of players and be like, we're fine. Mm-hmm. And where I would say is that to take, I think that the Braves, we've talked about, the Braves are much more positioned to make moves this year, trade deadline, than they have been in some other years. At the same time, even if you say Eric Hartman is off limits, which I don't know, maybe you sell high. He's very high right now. Maybe you're selling high, maybe you're selling low compared to where he's going to be. But if you even say he's off limits, I'd still say with the Braves, like, if they trade from, you know, the Briggs McKenzie, Owen Murphy, John Heal, you know, Connor Essenberg level, they're going to feel it. Mm-hmm. That's going to leave a gap of here's where we were, now here's where we are. The Brewers, the Rays, the Dodgers are the teams where it's like, look, okay, again, we haven't talked about the Brewers much, but I'll just lay it out this way. Like, I keep bringing him up, but like Josiah Ragsdale mm-hmm. is a prospect who I feel like that there are organizations that I'm writing right now for us. Like if Josiah Ragsdale, Josiah Ragsdale, I keep trying to combine him and Josiah in Hartshorn, the Cubs prospect in my head. But if Josiah Ragsdale was a Reds prospect, he would be one of the most intriguing position player prospects they have. For the Brewers, he's in Double A, and I don't think I could carve out a path for him to the big leagues in the next 2 years. Like, it would involve, there would be plagues that would have to happen, I feel like.
He's not even in the top 20 in their system after the draft. Like, and he would be top 10 in some other systems. I know at least, one of the systems I do, he would be top 10 for sure. Like,
I mean, Brady Ebel, who's 17 on the Brewers list currently, is a shortstop who went pretty well last year. And I would say that plenty of teams would be intrigued. You know, the Blake Burks of the world, you could just go down the list. Again, by the way, or if you said the Brewers want to go a different way, it could be like, okay, we'll let you have our third best DSL prospect. And other teams be like, we're listening, as opposed to, no, I'm not taking the third best DSL prospect. With them, it'd be like, which one do you think is third? Is that, you know, is it Ricky Moniz? Are we talking
Matos?
You know, like, yeah, I mean, you would actually, like, you would have to clarify first. It wouldn't be like, okay, you know, I'm intrigued because I don't know which one you have as third. You know, like, that's the kind of situation we're talking about here. Okay, before we wrap this up, Ian, who else stands out to you? You've been, like I said, you've been doing this blocked prospects. I feel like we should touch about the Yankees because you've got another piece coming. We'll preview it a little bit here. I'll throw out something semi-provocative here, but I mean it. I'm not just trying to make a hot take here. I know that the Yankees keep talking about, and I understand that Spencer Jones and Jason Dominguez are our trade chips at the deadline. And I'm not saying they're not, although I think Spencer Jones If you have your choice, Ian, Josiah Ragsdale or Spencer Jones, who do you want?
Ragsdale, probably. Spencer Jones in zone contact rate is terrifying. And the James track record.
Tibbs, yeah. James Tibbs or Spencer Jones, who do you want?
I'm probably taking Jones there.
That's the range. That's what I'm saying.
That's the range. Yeah.
That's the range we're talking about. We're not saying he has no trade value. We're saying if you are a Yankees fan who heard stupidity last year, like the only thing they'll trade him for is Paul Skeens. That was never true. Never. But if it was true, it was like an utter lack of understanding of who the prospect is. And I don't think the Yankees are that dumb.
Yeah.
But what my point being, he has value. But it's very modest value. I don't think that a lot of Yankees fans are prepared for the fact that Spencer Jones might net you a semi-useful reliever in a deal. Mm-hmm. I think Jason Dominguez goes beyond that to some extent. There's more value there. He's younger. There's less ceiling of this is, you know, that he's going to be a 40 home run guy. But there's also more of like, he would be a perfectly fine pirate to like basically become like, oh, he's fine in our outfield for 3 years kind of guy. But I would say the one that I always that kind of bring up is I think if the right trades are made, I think Anthony Volpe has value to other teams more than he does to the Yankees at this point. I do think though that trading former prospects is more valuable in the deals in a lot of ways than trading prospects for them.
Well, I think especially when you look at the way their system is constructed, they're probably going to have to go that route because it's a very pitching heavy organization or system, especially in the top 10. You know, the only bats in their top 10 are George Lombard Jr., who I believe it's been reported that he's not moving. Like I wouldn't be surprised if he's not.
Yeah. You trade Volpe because it's like Volpe goes and Lombard's your shortstop the next day.
Yeah. I mean, would you be surprised if he's up, you know, whatever, August 4th or August 5th, whenever the trade deadline, as soon as it passes? Because I don't think I would be, especially since he's performing back in AAA. He's back in AAA and he started hitting again. Like,
yeah, I would say, I'll put it this way. We have everything we know about Lombard. If you told me, okay, could he produce for them what Volpe's doing? Like the message you send is when you bring Lombard up is, he's going to bat 8th for us. He's going to bat 9th. We just want good defense. And then anything he provides offensively is a nice, pleasant surprise. But if he's off the table, there's really not position player prospects.
You can't really trade Dax Gilbey right now. He's played 2 games.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Exactly. And so that leaves the only other one in the top 10 is Spencer Jones. So, but if you're good, you know, if you and this is the thing too, I think we've seen is teams do value proximity at the deadline. You know, it's a lot harder sell. I feel like obviously in the minor deals, if you get like, you know, a DSL guy or something, that's understandable. But especially in those bigger deals, I think having at least one chip that is close proximity to the majors matters. You know, you want to be able to sell to your fans that, hey, we're selling, but this is not going to be a long rebuild. You know, we've got someone that we can put in the lineup tomorrow or next season that's going to help us. And that's where I think Volpe, Dominguez, guys like that become really interesting. And Volpe especially, he seems like a change of scenery candidate. You know, I think the way that everything is going with him, the way he's been so heavily scrutinized at shortstop, you know, it's a hard playing shortstop for the Yankees is not an easy job, especially given who you're following in the footsteps up there. And I think, you know, Volpe is just, he struggled with that. You know, I don't think there's any way to say that. He's defensively, and ultimately, if you're the Yankees, you don't need offense from that position. Your lineup is fine. You just need someone who can field the position regularly. And right now, I don't think Volpe's giving them that. So that's why, you know, if you're going to bring up Lombard, you can't do it with Volpe still on the roster. So that's why I think he becomes a very interesting chip, because I think there will be teams that would be chomping at the bit to get a chance to bring him into their development program, you know, and try to basically just start from scratch and just build things back up again.
I'll propose one. Excuse me. I'll propose random trade. No insights on this. No reporting on this. Anthony Volpe for Ryan Jeffers. Probably throw in a prospect on the Yankees side too. But Ryan Jeffers is better than what they're getting from the Yankees are getting from their catchers. Austin Wells is not having a great year. That's being really kind to say not having a great year. Not having a good year.
Yeah.
Really struggling at the plate. But if you said Jeffers, but like we've talked about with the Twins, like, and if the Twins, you'd be like, well, does that mean that you're out of it? And you kind of be like, no, we do think that with Volpe in our lineup at shortstop, which allows everyone to play, you know, kind of at better positions defensively, which they've kind of gotten to anyway. They kind of got to the point where like, Brooks Lee, you're not a shortstop. We're moving you. Royce Lewis, you're moving down the defense. But they've done all that.
Yeah.
But Volpe gives them a shortstop to kind of like say, hey, we might have this guy for a number of years here as a good defensive. We'll see what he hits. But he might hit, you know, he has hit at times, by the way, earlier in his career too. So like, that's kind of one of those deals. Again, that's one example of it. But I do think that there are multiple teams out there where it's like a second, you know, like, hey, can we Sonny Gray Anthony Volpe in some ways? I know that that's a veteran versus not, but like there have been a number of guys who they're terrible for the Yankees and then they go somewhere else and they're back to being fine. And
yeah,
I do think that that's kind of like there could be moves like that. But who else? What other teams are you going to be watching?
Well, just briefly on that one, though, like the reason I really like that is it kind of reminds me of the trade the Red Sox made a few years ago when they traded Christian Vasquez for Willy Abreu and Emmanuel Valdez. And
it worked out really well.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I believe you had him as the best right fielder traded in the last, what was it, 5 years? Or I don't remember what the sample was.
10.
10 years. There you go. So, but with someone like Volpe, you know, he would be replacing Ryan Kreidler, who's playing everyday shortstop for them right now. Like, it gives you more time to let Galen Culpepper kind of figure it out in the minors. Like, that's a very interesting one to me. In terms of some other guys like that, I think the Cubs guys you brought up are fascinating. Kevin Alcantara, Moises Ballesteros, even Matt Shaw. Because you look, their infield is completely locked up. And Alcantara is, I think he's one of the longest tenured members of the top 30s. I think he's ever. Yeah. Yeah.
Graduated now, I think, finally. I think he finally.
Yeah. It took, what, 8 years, I think. But, like, guys like that, even Ballesteros, you know, they gave him runway at the beginning of the season, but ultimately he's a DH, and it seems like they don't want to have a full-time DH. So they don't really have a good spot for him, especially with the emergence of Owen Ayers. He's probably never picking up a catcher's glove again. So guys like that, you know, look pretty blocked. I mean, the Red Sox – oops, sorry, go ahead.
And you mentioned Owen Ayers. Like, I think Owen Ayers is, like, would be a fascinating, like – Owen Ayers is the kind of player who – you don't look to trade, but what you're trying to get a sense of is what is the valuation of him? Because if teams are treating Owen Ayers as like, you know, this is a flash in the pan, who's having a great year. Okay, he's a good defensive catcher, but I still, you know, we'll give you a minor trade, you know, piece for him. Okay, we're keeping him.
Yeah.
But if someone says to you and says, we think Owen Ayers, like, we're interested, we think that he would be our starting catcher by next year, and we're willing to pay you at that level, well, then maybe you say, you know what, we're going to cash in on this. We're going to, that's the kind of guy you're listening to hear what you hear.
Yeah. And so, and that's what though it makes it so interesting is there's so many of these guys around the game, and you know, it's every team. And I think it just shows that, you know, it's one of the things that we talk about is the jump from AAA to the major leagues or AA, depending on the organization, how they feel about AAA. It's just so difficult. And even guys who are just so heavily, you know, highly regarded as prospects, it can take them a long time to figure it out. I think, you know, the best example of we've got right now, and I think the one that a lot of teams are going to fall back on when they're talking about these trades and why you can't give up on the elite talents, is Jordan Walker. You know, Jordan Walker was a guy who failed multiple times at the major league level. And finally, and this is what, year four, I believe, finally had that breakout. And, you know, if you're a team that's looking in, and I'm not saying, again, this guy's available or anything, but if you're looking at the Nationals and you have Brady House sitting in AAA at third base, is that someone that, hey, maybe, you know, if he has a different hitting voice in his head, we can kind of tweak some things. Maybe we can unlock, because, you know, he has power. You know, he's got a good arm. Like, are there things we can work on there? Volpe, same boat. Like, there's these players all around the game that are kind of just seem like someone who could really use a change of scenery. And so I think that just being, you know, it's going to make the deadline fascinating, because it's, in addition to having these prospects, you have these like post-grad kind of, you know, guys that were once very hyped prospects who have now kind of stagnated. And if you're a team and you want to kind of rebuild value, and it's kind of what it's a team like the Rockies is an example of who should be doing this. They did it with Jake McCarthy this offseason. Jake McCarthy, by the time he was DFA'd in Arizona, I think he was hitting under 200. He's gone to Colorado and he's on pace for a 2030 season. He's going to hit over 300. You know, TJ Rumfield, he wasn't as hyped of his prospect, but they took him as a flyer for, I believe it was Aaron Chaval, and they've turned him into, he's on pace to have like 20 home runs with a 300 batting average. You know, these are the type of guys that if your teams that maybe you don't have access or you're not a free agent destination, you can get guys that can drastically outperform their value. And that's, I think, what makes it so exciting and is going to make it such a fascinating deadline is you look up around the rosters. And this is something that I'm going to be talking about, as you said, that Mark and I are working on for later this week. We're going to have a couple of these guys from every team, and you'll see their rosters are littered with them, where it's like, oh, if this guy was, you know, it's not really worked here, but what if it works on another team? So I think that's why it's going to be such a fascinating bit. Yeah.
Carson Williams.
Yep. He's on the list.
Carson yep. Williams, like at this point, Carson Williams has really struggled to make adjustments to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and when we talk about windows closing, right? Like Carson Williams 2 years ago, you'd be like, okay, he's young. He got to AAA early. You know, he's, yeah, you could kind of very much see this kind of really developing. It's the same problems with sliders. It's the same problems kind of consistently now for 2.5 years. Yep. And you're like, okay, I mean, is he going to, like, there's a lot of shortstops coming up behind him. Is he going to be the next Taylor Walls? Like, I think offensively you're like looking at less, you know, like more power, but maybe a little less defense, but that kind of player. Well, I don't know if that's going to be the fit for the Rays, even though they do value defense, but maybe that's the kind of guy who, again, you get a different voice in his head. You see if something happens a little differently. Now, I think the challenge with all these, though, is it's also tough for a team to say, oh, okay, that's it's kind of like, unless you get some real value in return, it's all downside and no upside, right?
Yeah.
Like the downside is if you keep them is you've got to effectively give them playing time at some point. Like the mm-hmm. Cardinals did keep that going with Jordan Walker. They
yeah.
kept giving him playing time until he figured out. That doesn't always work.
No.
But the downside, if you trade that guy, is you can look really bad down the road.
Well, and I think that's why we see so few of those one-for-one prospect trades, which we saw, you know, I think it was maybe seven, 8 years ago. There were a plethora of them. You know, the one that comes to mind really was the Jazz Chisholm, Zach Allen trade. Like, or I guess you had one this offseason. You had the Jake Bennett, Luis Perales trade, which if you're a Red Sox fan has worked out great. I mean, I don't think anyone thought Jake Bennett was going to be as good as he's been lately. He's been one of the best pitchers in the American League, but you know, it's just so hard to, when you're doing that one for one trade on the sense that you think the other team has more information than you. So why are they willing to make this person available? But at the same time, if you get those trade wrong, those are the ones that stick with you. I think even more so than like the Yordan Alvarez trade is if you get a trade wrong where it's, hey, we're trading our former top prospect who we couldn't figure out for, you know, one of your players, whoever it is. If that guy figures it out in the other place, looks a lot worse on your ledger than it does if you trade a DSL guy for someone like who's a reliever, which, because we see those trades all the time, and what, 98% of the time they don't work out, or, you know, the guy you trade, the DSL player, doesn't turn into anything. So that's why it's so difficult, but it's also, it makes it so interesting is because, you know, if you're the team that's selling, when is their value? You know, are you going to ultimately get into the point where it's just diminishing returns and you're just stuck with that player? That's the situation you don't want to end up with. If you're the Rays, you know, you have other shortstops coming through the system. You have Taylor Walls, who's a better version for their team, I would say, of Carson Williams. At what point is Carson Williams, you know, does he go from someone who is at least an asset still, which I think he still is, to someone who you're just putting in as a throw into a trade? You know, that's what's so hard to manage is it worth keeping around his depth versus that, you know, potential loss of value?
Okay. I think this is a good way to end it, which is I'm going to play a little story time. We did 2025 trade deadline, right? I'm just going to give you a little bit of 2018 trade deadline. Okay. These were the prospects, the premium prospects we're trading 2018. Francisco Mejia, Yusniel Diaz, Brett Phillips, Luis Ortiz, Oscar Mercado, Hector Perez, Dylan Tate, Jorge Alcala, Taylor Hearn, Cody Medeiros, Willie Castro, Cody Carroll, Gilberto Celestino, Dean Kramer, Yoan Duran, ding, ding, ding. I will say also ding, ding, ding above that on Willie Castro to some extent, but Jalen Beeks, Bobby Wall, Tommy Eveld, Giancarlo Encarnacion, Wei-Chung Wang, Justin Williams, Brett Cumberland, Zach Pop, Rylan Bannon, Franklin Quilome, Genesis Cabrera, Giovanni Gallegos, David Paulino, Ty Buttrey, Seth Elledge. That's the top 30. Just point that point out again. Not that there's no one out there. Like, okay, Juan Duran, stud. Willie Castro, really? There's a couple other guys in there. But I'll just say, that was the top 30. I could go through the whole list. It doesn't get better after that. It gets more of like, remember some guys, you know? I mean, just to randomly give you 50-59. Will Toffey, Santiago Espinal, Forrest Wall, Chad Spanberger, Roel Ramirez, Corey Copping, Devin Smeltzer, Kyle Doty, Jacob Walspach, and Johansi Morel is number 60. So, again, it's not like I'm hiding those guys. The point being is there should be a lot of trades at the deadline because really what you are talking about, especially in the case of rentals, is it also should be that the prospect return is not that high. If you are trading a reliever, a back-end starter, a platoon outfielder who's in the final year of a deal and they're willing to take the contract off of you, a lot of times the names that are coming back in return aren't all that important. Now, you just laid out, there are also, like, yes, the Rockies should not be trading Jake McCarthy away just to give him away, but at the same time, the Rockies should be listening on any and every name that they have. There is no one on the Rockies. Hunter Goodman is not an untouchable. There's no one on the Rockies that's not available in the right deal. Got to get to the right deal, but we'll see. You know, it should be fascinating. We'll have a lot more, obviously, at baseballamerica.com. And if you enjoyed this and you haven't checked out the Hot Sheet podcast, the video on YouTube, on the live, we went live. We kind of rolled through some trade proposals on that. A lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun, yeah.
I think we're going to do that again. I think we'll do another live show again to do that, to just really kind of roll through that at some point before the trade deadline. So check that out. So much over. The stuff Ian talked about that he's writing this week is over at baseballamerica.com. And obviously, if you're a Baseball America subscriber, you can be checking that out. We have updated the top 100. We didn't even talk about it. We updated the top 100 and top 30s.
Yeah, we put draftees in.
We'll get to that at some point, you know. But you can see where those are over at baseballamerica.com as well. For Ian, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.